So, yeah, support our own. Let's try to put some money back in the community. And I'll even tell them, trigger warning is what inspired me to engage with these organizations. Because that's something very positive that could come out of the show.
It is, and maybe it can start a movement in its own right. Just, you know, to open people's eyes to black businesses or different communities that can actually impact with their money. You're listening to The Dividend, presented by Fees Always Win, the show before the show, after the show. It is what it is. I have no knowledge of the Goonies.
She gets it always. She nails it every single time. So I can just slow clap.
For now on, man, I know who to go to with my questions.
She is an expert in that knowledge. Like, the only one I think I watched as a kid was The Flight of the Navigator, and I was just like, that's crazy dope. The one where the kid is picked up by a spaceship that talks, then it goes really fast, and suddenly he's like 20 years in the future, but he's still a kid, and the government's trying to like do research on him, and his parents have moved on. It's throwed.
I've never seen that either.
Yeah, it's not on any other streaming. It's not on any other streaming services, so I wouldn't buy it. But it's good, I think.
And what's the name of it?
Flight of the Navigator.
I am going to look that up because I've never heard of that. But that's something I will watch. I'm into stuff like that.
Yeah, it was just done so well. I'm surprised they haven't tried to remake it again with like Hugh Jackman. Like, Hugh Jackman has Wolverine and then a bunch of other crazy shit.
Yeah, he does. The Prestige, when you think about it, The Prestige is one of the crazier movies I've ever seen. Like, it has an M. Night Shyamalan level twist to it.
No, the Prestige, one of my favorite movies ever. So I did not intend that statement completely a slander.
But The Prestige is not only a great movie. Not only does it really show a lot of respect to Nikola Tesla, David Bowie is Nikola Tesla, by the way, just saying. The Prestige may be one of Christopher Nolan's best movies.
Easily.
And I know he can put out a lot of great movies, but that's like, it's not just a sleeper movie. It may be one of his best movies, period.
No, it should have won awards. I don't even feel like it won more than one award.
Like, dude, like, everything made sense. Like, if you go back, if you watch Prestige the first time around, you're like, oh, my God. And then you watch it the second time, it's like everything makes sense. And then you start trying to figure, okay, well, that's the one brother, and that's the other brother, and that scene. Like, it makes sense personality-wise. Like, Christian Bale was doing such a great job acting-wise, and we appreciated it. But when I go back and look at it today, it's like, damn, Christian Bale is acting his ass off in this movie.
I did not see Prestige for the first time until I was probably like 3 to 4 years ago. And I was mad at myself for not watching it.
I saw it because my cousins and I, we had an apartment together. We didn't have cable, so we watched DVDs. And the DVD was sitting around, that DVD and Boondock Saints. I saw Boondock Saints like 3,000 times. So I said, you know what, I'm done with that. And then I watched The Prestige. The Prestige was such a hit that they came out with another movie. I forget the name of it, but it had Edward Norton in it, where he's like this magician slash something, something.
I thought it was called like The Magician or something like that.
Yeah, it's some movie Edward Norton was in. I forget the name of it, but I feel like they really took a lot from The Prestige to make that movie. You know how a lot of movies are motivated or influenced by other movies around the same area? Whatever the Edward Norton movie is, I really feel like it was influenced by The Prestige.
Well, if you ever notice, it's like, I think these studios just stack all these movies up. Because when they hear another studio's coming out with one, they do one. Like, Disney came out with The Jungle Book. The Warner Brothers had Mowgli ready to go. And it came, and it was scheduled to come out. Mowgli just wasn't the hit. Armageddon came out. That Day After Tomorrow came out that same year. Whether it's The Rock and the Rampage, and then it's something else, there's always like a pair to it. I just wonder, like, who's the person that gets the message over there? Is it like the director, like, oh, we're finally moving forward, might as well roll these out together because the controversy probably makes one better? are rolling out together because we just got to make it. And Edward Norton hasn't made a movie in 3 months and he's still under contract. So let's make him do this one.
Right. I mean, that's just like Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down, I think it was.
Exactly.
Like they were the exact same movie. They were the exact same movie. One won and the other one flopped because people were like, these are the exact same movie. Like, why would I want to watch this twice?
Well, some of them I do want to watch twice. I ain't going to act like I'm completely out of it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of one, like two movies that were extremely similar that I want to see both. I mean, other than the Fyre Festival documentaries, that's different because that's the actual content.
But with that, it makes me seem that Hulu thought, let's just go ahead and release it first because at least we have the controversy as two. Where if they just release one, whoever released second, if it was 2 months off, probably wouldn't have gotten the same ratings.
Exactly.
Because I watched it twice, but I watched both of them. I think most people who had access to both watch both.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get both sides. Hulu had more of a millennial attack. Netflix had more of it was informational, but it really painted the guy, I forget the guy who was involved with Hulu or wasn't involved with Netflix. It really painted him in a certain light where it was like, man, this dude, goodness. How did he even get to this point?
Just scamming. Scam after scam, and he kept getting people.
Yep. And then famous people was like wanting to be around him, and that just further helped him out. And then they had at least the knowledge to go find these influencers, the people who influence social media, and they used them to push their project, which actually was a really good idea. But, man, I didn't realize how much these influencers make. They out here making real money.
Yeah, they're out there getting coins. Just to show up to the island. That island did seem like it was a party. The one that got all the pictures to get people there.
Yeah.
And that's probably in their mind what they thought Fyre should have been. Because it looks like all those models had a blast. And I know Ja Rule had a blast. Because they even made a chant about it to repeat it to each other.
Man, Ja Rule. That's one thing about business. Like, I get the idea. He probably thought he was going to make easy money. But he really, I'm not even going to say doing research. Because we all make mistakes sometimes. But this dude, and he said I had nothing to do with it. Like, he was really the face of it. And he had no idea what was going on. Like, he had no clue.
He was ready to collect that check because he legitimately scared all of them.
And the funny thing is, it's like, I know 50 and Josh still have their moments. Like, if 50 won it, that's all he got to bring up. Like, even Joe Budden was talking like, man, you know, I want to have Ja Rule on a podcast. He was like, we'll see. And then he's like, oh, these documentaries coming out. He probably thought I was talking about that. I wasn't even thinking about that. But Ja Rule probably somewhere ducking out for a while waiting for this to die down.
Man, he would have those drink champs. That's my first time ever seeing a clip of the drink champs since they upgraded to Revolt to TV. That is some high production value. They got the stage lights. You got Noriega and all of his crew, like, well, prim and proper with high definition recorders. And I was like, man, this is quite a production from starting off as a podcast, what, less than 2 years now?
Yeah.
And he's good.
Come a long way.
He's a great interviewer.
He is. And they don't interrupt guests as much as they used to. Because you remember at first, man, they would cut guests off all the time. Now they're improving on that.
Like, I feel like Puff Daddy got him a coach where he was like, you're already good at what you do. But let me get you a team that can help you refine your skills so you can be a professional at this.
Was it Drink Champs when Diddy and Fabulous was on there and Diddy was coming across a little different? Was that Drink Champs?
I might have missed that episode, but that sounds about right. I think they showed up on the same episode, but what did Diddy say?
he just was saying, man, yeah, you party, but you need to party with me, daddy, or something he was saying. It went viral for a little bit. I just don't remember if it was Drink Champs or not.
Probably he doesn't.
Somebody else.
He doesn't do interviews on, like, I think half the reason Diddy got him because he didn't want to go on Funk Flex or Breakfast Club. This is his engine now.
Yeah, and I've been I'm coming off my social media fast, so like it's so much content that I've been missing. Like Killer Mike was on Joe Rogan, I think Mike Tyson was on Joe Rogan. So many interviews that have been out there. It's just so much content. Like, if you take 3 days off of social media, you miss so much stuff. Cause I was off of YouTube, and it's like, man, I miss so much stuff. There's so much stuff that I just had no clue about.
All right. So since we've already arrived there, I still haven't seen the Joe Rogan interview with Killer Mike, but last week by text or call, you told me I needed to watch Trigger Warning. I've watched 5 out of the 6 episodes, and I'm a bit blown away. I'm fascinated. I do have admiration for some of the concepts, but have trouble with the execution of many of them.
Yeah. A big conversation that we were having is, I didn't know if he was trolling or not. I feel like I was getting trolled in some of those scenarios, but other scenarios, it felt real, it felt honest. But it's, I don't know, a lot of that, it felt almost scripted. It felt it felt scripted, planned. It didn't feel, you know how, I'll give you an example. W. Kamau Bell does a show on CNN. And he did an episode where he, like, went to the Klan meeting out in the middle of nowhere. That felt real. Like, the tension, everything about that felt real. I'm not saying all the Killer Mike stuff didn't seem real, but a lot of it felt more reality TV show versus documentary type setting to me. I enjoyed it, but I didn't know if we were getting trolled or not. And I even asked you that. I wasn't sure if we were getting trolled.
See, Cassie's the one who brought it up to me, and she was like, is this a troll? With Killer Mike and all of this, they all seem like he comes from a heart and a perspective. I just think he discounts the power of the engine that he has to do it, or maybe that's the goal. And if anyone's unsure what we're watching, it's the Netflix special. It's called Killer Mike Trigger Warning. If you watch Vice TV and any of those shows, like with Action Bronson, it seems like it's produced by the same style of production as Vice TV documentaries, except it's Killer Mike and it's on Netflix. That's really the only difference. The first episode is about shopping black and the impact of the dollar in the black community. And that brought some realizations to me. We're only a couple days away from February, Black History Month. And that's something I've never even tried to do, is actively for a month or a 3-day period to only spend with minority organizations or especially black businesses. And this is one of the clips that he starts off the show with, just on the impact of the black dollar.
See, back then, the money, it went around one time.
Yeah.
In the black community. All the white community money, they money go around 2 or 3 times.
Because we aren't focused on our dollar, our whole community seems to be suffering. Yeah. And now I noticed you guys cut white people hair, black people hair.
We cut hair.
So a black business doesn't mean it just serves black people.
Oh, no.
Have you ever heard of something called a green book? Apparently it was a book that black motorists would buy. So when they were traveling through areas, especially in the South, they would find out where black hotels were, where black barbershops and restaurants and stuff were. Have you ever heard of that book?
I heard of it, but I've never seen one.
I would like to see a green book of sorts. Started again, like I didn't know where to get a haircut in Athens. Now I know. So, of course, I'm going to tell all my friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We appreciate that. Then,
and if I ever get some food, I'll tell them where black people can actually get food at.
That one scene is probably the best summary of the episode. Would you agree with that concept?
Yeah, I mean, it opened my eyes to a lot. Not only regarding shopping and eating you know, with black businesses, but he was like, you know, the food has to be farmed by black farmers. And it's like, that makes it that much harder trying to track your food. And he wasn't smoking weed because apparently black folks don't necessarily, you know, have that distribution right now. Like, they might sell it, but they're not the ones growing it and producing it in mass droves. But even the part about the Green Book, we talked about that a couple of weeks back, and that was powerful in itself because, I mean, the Green Book was how people knew what towns and what cities they could go to when they were traveling, what cities, when it got dark, you didn't want to be caught in. Like, the Green Book was basically a guide. It really was a guide to save a lot of lives. So hearing him say that in 2018, 2019, whenever that was filmed, it was deep to me. But it makes me wonder, like, let's say, for instance, we tried to do that challenge and only, you know, pursue black businesses. Like, how difficult would that be for us? You in Houston, me in the Dallas area, like, how difficult would that be in 2019?
I don't know how difficult it would be. And I even remember this brings up when I read the Colin Powell book growing up. That's one of the documentaries I was required to read. And I thank my parents for making me do so. But as part of that, I remember it stood out as he says, I still only travel at Holiday Inns now because they were always the hotel that no matter what, they had no problem for black people residing there or renting a room. And so that part's pretty interesting. And I also wonder, because I haven't seen the movie yet, The Green Book, you've heard there's a movie out about that jazz traveler who has... Oh, you've seen it. So is it referencing The Green Book?
So the movie is titled Green Book. They only reference The Green Book itself only a handful of times. So maybe 2 or 3 times in the movie they reference The Green Book. But they do show you the differences, not to spoil the movie, but there is a scene where the weather's real bad. He can't see where he's going, and he ends up going into what's called a sundown town. For people who don't know, sundown towns were towns where if you were other, these were towns you didn't want to get caught in when the sun went down, because typically you wouldn't make it out alive. Their towns apparently in the Green Book that said if you get a flat tire, if your car breaks down, rather than trying to get it fixed, if you're in this town, you're better off walking and getting out of town rather than sitting up to wait to get your car fixed. But yeah, it does reference a lot of that in the movie.
That's interesting that these came out at the same time. Once again, I feel like it's a studio thing and the message was there to be heard.
Yeah.
But with this whole episode, it does make me want to challenge myself to make sure I support more black owned businesses during the month of February. Just as I say, to let my dollar stay in. That one thing was pretty impactful, that the average dollar in the black community stays in the community for less than 4 hours.
Which is so crazy. So our dollar, basically, it goes everywhere other than in our own communities, in a sense.
Yeah. And then every other community, I think, was a minimum of a couple of days.
Yeah.
But one thing I do take umbrage with is it also goes into the concept of the next episode, where he keeps referencing segregation and identifying some semblance of benefit by development of community or insular understanding of community resources. And I feel like that's discouraging. Because it's not that there's less black doctors now. There's definitely more per capita. They just not necessarily might not only work in a black community, when in the past, that was the only place they could work. Now they have a broader opportunity.
Right. And this is another thing. I think after I saw this episode, this is when I called you and told you about it, when we talked about it, because I had a couple of issues with this episode. And we talked about that. Like, there are scenes where he's talking to the kids. And based on his interaction with the kids, that's why I felt like I was being trolled. I felt like he was talking to actors. I don't know if they were real kids or not. But, well, real kids in the sense of being, you know, kids and not actors. But there's a scene where the kid was talking about he wants to be a president. And he's like, you'll never be president. He said, you should have dreams that are more, what did he say?
Yeah, I have the clip, I think. So give me a second.
Okay.
You owe your parents not to dream big. You know, you owe it to your parents to dream practical and start making money as soon as you can. Like, you're not going to be able to be president.
That hurt my heart.
That bothers me on so many levels. There are those that would agree and will say it's better to dream practically and make the money that you can. But the discussion you and I had about this previously, I get the message that Killer Mike is trying to put out there. I appreciate what he's doing, but I will never be in a position where I agree with limiting someone's dreams. Because it's through your imagination and your passion you're able to make things happen that otherwise wouldn't have happened. The creator of WD-40, if Killer Mike talked to him after WD-10, he would have left that alone. We would have never got it. But I feel like you look at people, not just people of color, just people in general who have a desire for something. They want to pursue it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Barack Obama. Like you look at people, Oprah Winfrey, people who went through so many different adversities and kept pushing through. Because if Barack Hussein Obama was that kid in that classroom, he talked to Killer Mike. Killer Mike would have told him, you can't be president. And you can't. There's power in the tongue. I'm a religious person. I really believe in it. And I get the overall general concept of what he's saying. I just don't agree with telling somebody what they can't become. Especially when you don't have a time machine. You don't have the foresight to know what their capabilities are. I will never agree to that. Like, I don't care where you come from. And even black men, we can't limit what their capacity is. If anything, we should try our best to help build them up and give them opportunities that we ourselves haven't had. But that really bothered me. Not because I didn't agree with, I get the message of it, but I will never agree with anybody, man, woman, child. No one can speak over your life and limit you on what you want to be. No one should be able to limit your dreams or your passions. Hell, even if you want to be an astronaut, if that's the case, then we need to put you in programs and give you an idea of what it is you want to do. Like, it's not for me to say you can never be this. Who am I to tell you that? That bothered me.
And I agree with every point you make. And just as a continuance of it, I think that's why the educator looked at him with such disgust. Because it discounts what she does as an educator, that it's a refined field and understanding of human development, especially childhood human development. Like, even with the one kid that wanted to say, I'm going to be a rocket builder, I'm going to be a doctor and all this. And Killer Mike's telling them, don't dream. It's like, man, that's an astronaut. That's the type of background you need to be an astronaut. Just... Right. So, like, an instructor could identify that's what that is and help a kid work towards that goal. I think simplifying it to that, because he was trying to say is, hey, sometimes you don't need to go to college and get out of there with a basket weaving degree. You could be an HVAC technician and make $110,000 a year after you finish your apprenticeship. That's a strong message. Yes, we should have more trade schools. But to tell somebody you shouldn't want to be an engineer and learn how to build those air conditions, that's not a positive message. And back on your point of people that became highly successful after 40, Stan Lee created his first hit comic title, The Fantastic Four, just shy of his 39th birthday. So if he quit after high school, that's where it would have been. It would have been stuck. Vera Wang was a figure skater and journalist before entering the fashion industry at age 40. Today, I had no idea she was a figure skater, but I do know Vera Wang dresses. Samuel Jackson had only had bit parts before landing his award-winning role at age 43 in Jungle Fever in 1991. we would have missed out on all those great movies. Henry Ford created the Model T car when he was 45 years old. So these are just some examples of people that did this. And they would have lost it all.
Can I add one more? And this is a wrestler, but I got to add it in just because. Diamond Dallas Page didn't get started into wrestling, like becoming an actual wrestler, until he was over 35. And normally that's when you're told you're too old and you won't be successful. Ric Flair basically told him, stick to being a manager. You got a good voice. You cut good promos. Let's do that. Jake the Snake Roberts mentored him and helped him learn how to wrestle. I bring that up not only because DDP became a successful wrestler. He created DDP Yoga, and he put out a documentary where he's actually saving lives. So my point is, your dream and your passion, it may not just be the title that you wanted to be. That might actually fuel you to help and save other people's lives in different avenues you never saw. So it's so much that can come from pursuing your dream outside of just the dream itself. So I would never tell a kid that they can't be something. You're right. If he wants the word to say, you don't have to go to college, because I never had that conversation. I thought I had to go to college to become successful. I have friends that never went to college. They don't have student loan debt. They're making six figures and above. People who worked at Walmart and became managers and worked their way up or worked in different fields. Like, I get that part of it, but I would never tell someone, well, you can't do this. And I agree with everything you said, Chris. Like, there's certain ways to word that. There's certain ways to put out your message. I just don't think that was the right way. But, you know, to each his own. There may be other people who agree. I just personally didn't agree with that, the way that was worded.
And so here's his thesis of what he bases his whole outlook for this episode on.
Public school is going to shit.
Are American schools any good?
Our graduates compete regularly at the level of third world countries.
Schools responsible for the education of Black and Latino children are underserved, underfunded, and often without experienced teachers.
So why is school not working? I would argue that the school system is failing, not because it's teaching future generations poorly. It's simply not teaching the right things. We're teaching kids useless knowledge. What are the classic novels? Algebra. But in reality, we should be teaching them to dream realistically, learning practical skills that will actually prepare them to make money in the real world. No one gives a shit about what you're thinking. They give a fuck about what you can build. That's why today I'm going to fix education in America.
And even in that intro, he acknowledges the funding isn't equal. So even the starting line, it's not a true starting line, or equality in the starting line to even base that concept off of.
Right.
So this reminded me of one thing. Do you listen to Eddie Izzard, the comedian? He also had a couple of shows on FX or FXX, I think.
Yes, actually.
Okay, so this comes from that Stand Up Dress to Kill, which is one of his large ones. I think he recorded at San Francisco. And he starts discussing the outlook of the English and why you never hear of, like, the English. They don't talk about dreams, and it's kind of a little doldrum because their economy was devastated by all the wars. Every time they have a war, they take it out of the citizens. So this is kind of that outlook, and it summarizes, I think, what Killer Mike is truly looking for. Hey, let's limit our dreams here and then just let everybody know a path of what's achievable with doing your current trajectory and not putting in your interest anywhere else.
And I grew up in the 70s when it was a period of, you know, the careers advisor used to come to school and he used to get the kids together and say, look, I advise you to get a career. What can I say? That's it. And he took me aside. He said, what you want to do, kid? What you want to do? Tell me your dream. I said, I want to be a space astronaut, go to outer space, discover things that have never been discovered. He said, look, you're British, so scale it down a bit, all right? All right, I want to work in a shoe shop. Discover shoes that no one's ever discovered, right at the back of the shop on the left. And he said, look, you're British, so scale it down a bit, all right? All right, I want to work in a sewer, then. Discover sewage that no one's ever discovered. And pile it on my head, and then come to the surface and sell myself to an art gallery. He said, what the fuck have you been smoking, eh? Certainly haven't been smoking in a bar in California, that's for certain.
That is a perfect clip for what we're talking about.
And so, but yeah, that hard one, student might have, only teaching practical skills will turn the U.S. to England or Russia. What that actual fear of people who preach socialism is that it'll turn it to communism, where you're going to work in this factory despite how smart you are, because this is what we need right now, and that's cars. He told the kid, you owe it to your parents not to dream big, but dream practical. And that's just problematic, and there's no other way to look at that than being problematic. Because as a parent, I feel like you owe it to your kids to let them dream until they can't dream anymore.
I mean, he himself, like, to become a rapper who has expanded himself to these different avenues, that's not practical thinking. Like, nobody thinks becoming a rapper is practical. Starting a rap group. Like, he himself, to get to where he is, he had to follow his dreams. Because practical thinking doesn't go out and say, I'm going to become a rapper. I want to start a rap group. From that rap group, I'm going to create this content on Netflix. Like, those are dreams. That's not practical. Like, the content that he has is ambitious. It's, in his mind, I would imagine he wants that to be a game changer. That's not practical either. Those are bold moves. So he himself, not in his words, but in his own personal achievements and aspirations, are going against what he's telling these kids. I don't know. Like, I'm a fan of Killer Mike. I know you don't necessarily have to agree with everyone somebody does, to, and they can still be an ally. I consider Killer Mike an ally. I just think that sometimes ego can alter a person's perception. It goes from, this is how I feel, to, this is how I think, and everyone else should think like this as well. And that, for me, is the difference. It's one thing for you to feel that way, but to tell other people that they have to think like you, or they can't think for themselves, or want to pursue their own dreams, that's what I guess I have an issue with.
I couldn't agree more. And so let's go on to that third episode. This one is a little more out there. But I actually get what his vision here is. But by the end, I knew it was a troll the whole way. And I feel like it's the double standard and the admiration by the general public when it comes to outlaws, gangs, or criminal organizations.
But hold on, Chris. Hold on. One question about episode two before we finish, because I want to get your opinion. I really want to get your opinion on this before we continue. It's a quick question. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
The porn-based educational videos. What's your take on that? Because I laughed more than anything when I saw that. What is your take on that?
Complete troll.
Just checking. Because I felt the same way, but I wasn't sure. And then going and taking it to principals and schools. Like, I just want to see. Gotcha. Okay.
Complete troll.
I just had to ask. Gotcha. Okay.
And so,
episode three,
he starts off with the history of Hell's Angels. And if anyone's aware, Hell's Angels, you could buy shirts, you could buy memorabilia. They're in movies. They have books that have been written about them. They've even sued large entertainment TV. Heck, there was a show for like 5 seasons called Sons of Anarchy based on the Hell's Angels. Meanwhile, the Crips and Bloods, due to criminal activity that has been linked to those organizations, does not have that same type of public admiration outside of rappers. And I don't feel like I'm being facetious when I say that. It's just Lil Wayne, lines that went from a Crip to a Blood. You have Soulja Boy. I think he says he's a Blood. All of these people align themselves because, one, it's the area that they came from. It's the influence and the music, that there is some sort of admiration for those two organizations compared to other ones. But the violence around them is often the first thing that's brought up.
Right. Let me ask you this, Chris, because it's real subtle how they're doing it. But do you see how he's trying to rebrand the way we talk about Crips and Bloods? Like, instead of using gangs, he calls them street fraternities.
I'm okay with that, because like real people who are Crips and Bloods, they come from areas where that was often a tool for their survival.
Right.
That your parents have to work all the time. The community you in was the community you were born in, where your parents lived the whole time you were a kid. So you grew up around the same people. Sometimes you're just almost not really an ally, but your friends join, you hang out with your friends. You're technically not, but the cops don't care.
Fair point. I just like the rebranding of it though. Like, they're not even using that term anymore. They're street fraternities, and you hear that term enough, and it's like, oh, it's just a street fraternity. That's not a gang. It's a street fraternity. And it's like, oh, okay.
I could see that. They have colors. They have dances, steps. What, rules. That blue face rapper? What, no smoke? He can't rap. But he Crips. He Crip dances all over the gram.
Wasn't it an episode of Insecure? Somebody were they Crip walking? When Issa's apartment caught on fire?
I thought, weren't they a Blood because he kept changing everything to B?
Okay, well, what kind of walk is that if they're Blood?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up, but you might be right that they were Crip dancing in there.
You may be right also, because you're right. They did change all the C's to B's. I'll have to look that back up. But anyway, gotcha.
But that being said, Killer Mike says, why don't the Crips and Bloods have a brand? And that would, one, help soften the image, give the organization a way to have income as a whole organization so they're just not only a criminal enterprise. And the troll starts off immediately with, it feels like when you're a researcher and you're going through grad school and they say, do a project. And you're like, well, what's the goal of the project? What's the end goal? There is no end goal. You let the research lead you to what your ultimate conclusion is. You can't say, my conclusion is, I believe people who drink bullet bourbon out of a coffee mug drive better than people who drink Jack Daniels. That's not something that you could research toward, but you could see what are the influence of certain brands and how it's and the intake effect on driving. That's a research paper. That being said, with this episode, he asks for perfectly good ideas and by far takes the worst one, which is the one he offers. And here's just a quick clip of that.
Anybody familiar with motorcycle gangs, motorcycle clubs?
Yeah, right? Hell's Angels.
Hell's Angels. And that's the one I'm talking about. I can go buy a Hell's Angel t-shirt right now on a merchandise site, right? That sends money to that organization can help take care of their own members. And I said to myself, why hasn't any of my Crip homeboys ever done this? So I would like to propose that you guys start a business. Do y'all think that's something we could do?
Yeah. I think we could do it.
You guys have a larger than life brand, but you don't have a product. Like in your mind's eye, your imagination, what product would you?
Like me personally, I try to go deep and try to get like buttons and zippers. Everything you buy gotta have buttons and zippers. And if you notice, all the zippers and buttons got, like, they say some shape.
YKK or something.
YKK. That's the only fucking zipper brand. So if you charge cheaper than what they charge, you bound to goddamn, you know, you going to make some money.
Gotcha. I'm smoking a joint the other night, and I thought about it the other night. I think about it frequently. Coca-Cola has killed a lot more motherfuckers than Crips. Diabetes and obesity. You know what I'm saying? You look at me and Yayo and even stumble a bit. We're drinking Coca-Cola.
No cap.
That shit kills about 270,000 people a year, right?
Yes, sir.
2,700 with gang violence. That's less. That's
1%. Right.
Yeah, Coca-Cola celebrated. Like, I don't mean just goddamn celebrate. You can take your kids down to the goddamn Coca-Cola
factory.
Yeah. Like, you remember being your little going to summer camp, Coca-Cola, t-shirts and shit. Your mama buying cases of this shit that's killing your grandmama. Right? Yeah. But they never got pushback. So I was like, man, what if the Crips had a soda?
He Cuban B'd that man's whole idea.
Yep. He never even acknowledged the idea. And it's a great idea if you think about it. Like, it's a great idea.
Yeah, I feel like
it was well thought out.
Yeah, I feel like Crip and Blood Soda, yeah, I'd still go in the... There's many parents that are just like, hey, buy that for you.
All right.
But a button or zipper company that's distributed at a Walmart or Michaels or any of these stores, you'd never know because they never call it like Crip Zippers.
Exactly. Exactly. And it, I mean, that would be colorless in a sense because it wouldn't just be blue. It wouldn't just be red. That would be, you know, it can go to different multitudes. And it's a great idea. And it seemed like a easier concept regarding being able to make it and produce it. But I know you didn't watch the interview on Joe Rogan, but I want to add this into the Crip Cola conversation. So he was telling Joe Rogan about Crip Cola. And before, this is the only thing that he contradicted himself in my eyes, maybe not to everybody, but he was talking about how sugar is poison. And, you know, cola has killed a bunch of people. So Joe asked him, so what's in Crip Cola? Sugar? And then Joe was like, well, have you tried stevia? You know, alternate alternatives. And he was like, well, you know, I kind of feel like either I'm going to be in it or I'm not going to be in it. You know, like, either I'm going to do the whole thing, I'm not going to do it at all. And I'm like, you just said sugar was poison. And then you said sugar in this product that you're selling, somebody offered an alternative. And you basically said, well, you know, either I go all in or I don't go in at all. And to me, that was, you really contradicted yourself in that moment. But
well, I feel, you know, as intelligent as Killer Mike is, and he's intelligent. Like, if he went through a traditional path, he would have been like a PhD researcher on cultural studies, or he would have been a dean at a school or president of a university. He's a people person. He understands people. Sometimes I don't feel like he has the words, because when he was describing it to the Bloods, and he was like, yeah, and he's like, I'm a vegan. That's not really part of me. And he was like, well, we're not going to put any high sugar in it. And what I feel like he's trying to communicate with Joe Rogan without saying it is, it's not going to have high fructose corn syrup. It's going to have sugar cane sugar, which is healthier for you and your body could actually process.
All right. And see, if he conveyed it that way, it was like, okay, yeah. But when he said sugar is poison, and then Joe Rogan was like, so what's in Crip Cola? Sugar. It's like, you need to kind of expound about, because they talked about that on Netflix, and they explained it in greater detail on Netflix. But for people that may not have seen Netflix and were watching Joe Rogan's podcast, they didn't get that added incentive, the added information.
That's the biggest one of it. Sometimes I just don't feel like he has the words to eloquate it for to eloquate it for this purpose, not outside of just his music. Because they're two different mediums. In music, he raps perfectly clear. He's consistent in what his messaging is. And you could follow his complete stream of thought from the beginning of the song to the end, because he does build it almost episodically when he's telling a story. But my problem with turning down the idea of the zippers, the first episode you talk about the black community lacks that complete vertical integration that I can't, he says he can't buy cannabis or he can't take a ride in the car because there's no black manufacturers. He didn't have to buy any new pants because he was already wearing the ones he had on. But if he did, are there any black zipper or button makers? Because right, you can't have a black jean company if there's not a, or for his purpose and that keeping the money in the black community, you can't have a jean company if they have to outsource most of their parts from non-minority owned organizations.
And that's the thing. Like, they didn't even, maybe they edited it in a way, but they didn't even take time to consider that idea. They didn't even take the time to say, that may be a good idea. I mean, we can do Crip Cola, but we can also pursue this option as well. We don't have to do one of those. Maybe we can do both. They never even addressed it or went back to that idea. They just kind of left it where it was. And you're right. Like, Crips are producing buttons and zippers. Nobody's going to look on the button. Like, hell, the button and zipper on the pants I'm wearing now, I don't know who produced those. I haven't pulled it out and looked at it to research the company. I don't know if it's made in America, made in China. I don't know. But I know I need it for my pants to stay on correctly. So you're right. That would have been a great idea. And that would have been an idea that could have potentially created profit without the controversy or the coloring or the potential rivalry or danger of choosing one street fraternity's drink over the other. Not saying that there would be, but I'm just saying.
Okay, possibly. So YKK, I just have to look on my pants that I'm wearing, and it's a YKK company. They're a Japanese organization, and the reason why it's spelled Y letter K letter K letter is because the word is spelled completely out in W-A-I-K-E-I-K-E-I-E-I, YKK. So, interesting story about it. They're not, at this time, they're not publicly traded in the U.S. They make their revenue, net income, for fiscal year 2014 is $390 million.
That's a lot of money for buttons and zippers.
So we just think if there's an organization that took just 10% of that market share, that's $39 million.
And that goes back to what the guy said. We can sell it for cheaper and we can make money.
Yeah, nobody would have a clue. It's like, oh, now we're making hoodies instead of Bathing Ape or whatever any of these companies are. We use this special brand.
That still is a great idea, like, period.
I hope somebody watched this and took the idea, or I hope the Crips went ahead and ran with that idea. Because the one who gave that idea, I forget his name. I think it was like Coke or Murdo. It was one of those. We were like, okay, that's an impactful name. Not getting a 9-to-5 telling him that name. But low-key, he kept just dropping gems that whole episode. Where it's the exact example. If he didn't grow up on the block, he probably could have had a chance in a better funded educational system to have broader opportunities, and he could have been a lawyer, doctor, or researcher himself.
And that goes back to our prior conversation, because I was wondering if he was an actor. Because it was like, man, this dude, he has some really good ideas. Is this guy really who they say he is, or is he an actor? Because I was wondering, because I didn't know if I was being trolled at that point.
Like, it that point, I think, secured it even more, knowing because they had that one character that they used in later episodes, Mario. Mm-hmm. And that when I was like, Cassie was like, no, this is definitely an actor. Because he was saying every problematic thing through one character. When there were multiple opportunities for him to be like, no, that's screwed up. I should rethink the way I say that.
Right.
But I felt like he just wanted to make a point of the double standard and admiration from American culture when looking at outlaw culture.
Which is interesting. I mean, so that means you saw the episode with the song, right?
Yes, I did see the episode with the song, and I couldn't make it past that episode. I was done.
Yeah, it's funny that she said that because I was done too. Like that, the one particular lyricist and his content and the way that they shot all that, like, okay, I'm getting trolled.
Well, that guy reminded me of a person that we met in Arizona at a training for 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, oh, man, it's so much I can say that I don't want to say, but yes, I can see the similarity.
Nothing else to
I
say.
I can definitely see it.
But yeah. I know that outlook exists and can coexist with others that don't reflect their own skin color. Because at no point did he drop it in, Bob, when he was with us. But we've seen the Facebook page.
Yeah, we've seen the receipts of what really is being said. I mean, but Chris Rock said it best. I mean, regarding people that you deal with, if you want to find out who they really are. But the gentleman in particular that we're talking about, his comfort and ending, you know, that song the way he did, it was a bit of a surprise. I'll say that. You know, it wasn't an M. Night Shyamalan type of twist, but it was a bit of a surprise. I wasn't expecting that, but it's cool.
When Mario showed up with the guitar and lyrics and didn't even play the guitar and just did spoken word, I was like, come on, man. Why are y'all messing with the audience like this?
Yeah, I agree with Cassie. It's most definitely a troll. And that's what we talked about. Like, man, I feel like I'm getting trolled right now because the way the show is set up and the way things are going, it almost feels scripted versus, like I said before, on CNN, W. Kamau Bell's show, it's different. It has a different flow to it. Anthony Bourdain, in a sense, you know, people that actually go out and deal with people genuinely. I'm not saying he wasn't dealing with them genuinely. It just felt like it was more there, more creative control there, I guess.
Yeah, I felt like the first episode was genuine, and then they got less and less genuine as it continued.
Yeah, he was saying initially it was supposed to be a show on FX, but some kind of way it went from FX to Netflix, so go figure.
Okay, so that's what it is then, because that explains it. It feels like episode one was recorded much further in advance as a pilot. FX didn't pick it up, and Netflix said, we'll pick it up, but we're going to need you to ratchet it up a little.
Right.
And that's when
creative.
Yeah. Like I could see him walking in saying, I want to make an episode on the educational system in the US, and Netflix going, well, what if it was porn combined with handyman activities? And he was like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, we'll give you $2 million and then we'll give you a production credit and the opportunity at another show in 2 years, or you could leave it on the shelf.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, Chris. Because even with the porn formational episode, the content that they showed, that's what made it feel like he was being trolled. Because they showed more of, like, they showed a lot of the content, but they showed a lot of extra porn-related stuff that I didn't expect to see. And I was like, wait, am I being trolled? Once again, like, that's the question I kept asking myself. Like, whenever we talk about this show, no matter where we are, the main thing I'm going to go back to is, am I being trolled? Because that's what I kept asking myself, because I really was wondering, like, this can't be real.
You're right. That's exactly what I thought. It cannot be real. But, yeah, so I didn't watch the rest of the episodes. Maybe next week I'll actually watch it. I'll tell the audience now, I'm probably not. And it's not anything personal. I think you hit the nail on the head. Netflix took over production and modified the show from his original points. Because the points he makes and the dialogue he includes differ from what the episode ultimately reflects by the end.
Yeah, I agree. Like, now that I think about it, episode one had a more somber informational tone to it. And then after that, it took more of an entertainment-based, less appeal to key demographics in this area type of vibe. Like, it became more comedic and more over the top in areas that it wasn't before. And the quality, honestly, looked a lot better moving forward. Like you said, like they episode one was the pilot, and then episode two took a while, and it's like they went in a different direction after episode one.
Well, speaking of episode one, I think I'm going to try an activity, even though it might be much, but to support at least a minimum of two black businesses that aren't hair care related. So this doesn't include the barbershop. If I'm already supporting it, that doesn't count towards this goal. These are identifying new organizations that previously my monthly income didn't go to support for a product or good or service. And so one example this week, I did go to the legendary Mickey's, and this is my coworker brought me there. And it's located on the southwest side of Houston, and it's the soul food restaurant in Houston. You walk in, and on the walls, it's the pictures of everybody. It's a hoo-hoo. If they come through 97.9 for an interview, they're going to Mickey's. If they're coming for, if they're coming through for the AKA event, they're going to Mickey's to eat. And it was as good as anything you've ever heard about it. But now I want to find a green book for Houston just to identify some more opportunities of organizations I could support. And this is something that I discussed with my wife prior to this episode, because it's something we're going to put an effort towards starting. I think that's Tuesday or Thursday. No, it's Friday is the 1st of February.
Chris, I may get with Kiki, man. We may join in on this. I like that idea.
So, yeah, support our own. Let's try to put some money back in the community. And I'll even tell them, trigger warning is what inspired me to engage with these organizations. Because that's something very positive that could come out of the show.
It is, and maybe it can start a movement in its own, right? Just, you know, to open people's eyes to Black businesses or different communities that can actually impact with their money.
Yeah, and some organizations just might not be a knowledge source there. It's, I choose my plumber through Yelp because Yelp said 115 ratings. The plumber was 4.5, so I go with them. Now there's additional things I might look for before putting my money towards an organization, at least for this month. And these aren't just organizations of physical activity and dancing.
I like that. I like that idea, Chris. It's going to be a journey, I would imagine, because it's taking you out of your comfort zone, just having to search things out that otherwise you probably wouldn't have to. But I think it's worth it, not only for the experience, but the potential networking that may come from it, too.
And if it can't be done in Houston, it can't be done at all.
Right.
But I have no excuse in Houston. But I guess, to finish off the entertainment section, did you get a chance to see Glass?
Yes, I did. I liked it. I didn't love it. There are things about the end that I felt could have been done better. But I get the overall message. And I also get the idea that they wanted to be more realistic. And realistically speaking, a lot of the heroes that can potentially inspire change typically may or may not get killed off. So I get that without spoiling anything for anybody, because I don't want to say too much. But I liked it. There's certain things I wish would have been done differently, but I'm not the director. So
yeah, I think it was the Firestarter podcast that pointed out to me. I wasn't disappointed with the story. I was disappointed in myself. Because I do want to see extraordinary stuff. Like, a dude flipping a car is extraordinary. I kind of want to see that car flip and fly through a window of a building, because that's what my expectations have become. But I will say, as a person who's not traditionally a fan of M. Night Shyamalan, this trilogy is some of his best work. It's right up there with Stuart Little.
Okay, Chris. I see you.
So Sixth Sense, Stuart Little in the East Trail 177 trilogy.
That's what you're rocking with, huh?
That's what I'm rocking with. That's my order. I'm sticking to it.
You make a good point. I mean, after watching Avengers and so many Marvel movies, not only do you see the spectacular, it goes above and beyond. Like, people are throwing stuff across worlds, basically. So, yeah, to see a guy move a car or bend metal or break open a metal door, that is amazing. But our expectations, like if this was the 70s or 80s, we'd be like, ah! But in today's age, it's like our expectations are over the top. And this movie was made with Blumhouse, and Blumhouse is known for, they're not going to spend the most money on their movies. So I would imagine, given the budget and what he had to work with, you know, he did his best. So I applaud that. It's just certain things I want to see more of. I want to see more of a fight between, you know, certain characters, and I just want to see more story, because there's certain parts where when you look back on it, you're like, wait, why did they do this? Why didn't they do that? But Samuel Jackson said it best. It's an origin story. So if you look at it as an origin story, it's setting everything else up. So all right, once I tell myself that, I feel better about it.
Yeah, and not only is the origin the way it's set up, it was good storytelling. I now want to know more about the twist. And this is the first time in an M. Night Shyamalan movie I was left with wanting to know more on the twist. And that's all I could leave the audience with without spoiling it. And I'll be looking forward if this stops at a trilogy, or does he have more directions plans for prequels?
As long as I'm just glad it wasn't a Serenity. I think that's a Matthew McConaughey movie. As long as it doesn't have that level of twist type of reverberations, I'm good.
Is that that new one?
Anything other than the Matthew McConaughey twist, I'm good. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the entertainment segment. This is our first, like, entertainment dividend in a while. Like, pure entertainment. Our first one since the end of Atlanta, like, week 8 of Atlanta.
Man, that's been a long time.
It's been a long time, because we didn't even finish the show. But Billions comes back in a couple of months.
Mid-February is a birthday present to myself. I am officially joining Team iPhone. I'm crossing over to Apple just to see how I feel about it.
All right. I got something coming your way then, middle of February.
So it's coming, man. I've already talked to the wife about it. It is coming.
Is she a Galaxy user as well?
Oh, no. She is a part of the Apple team as well. She's been pushing this move for the past 3 years. When me and her first started talking, I had an Android that was old and janky. Her words, not mine. So, you know, she's been pushing for this for years. I'm finally about to listen between you, her, and other people telling me all the benefits.
See, this is why they call our wives the better half. Because they be knowing. They know how to make our life better. We just won't listen.
I will most definitely tell her you said that, and I'm quite sure she would be very appreciative, sir.
Talk to me, blood. Me and Nala was just about to go watch the Bear Bears.
Bear Bears, Daddy.
We use no C word, sweetheart. It's a bloodhouse.